Hi, welcome to today's On This Day in Tudor History with me, Claire Ridgway, author of On This Day in Tudor History, as well as a few other history books. Okay, where am I taking you today? Well, I'm taking you to the reign of King Edward VI. For On This Day in Tudor History, the 28th of August 1551, Lord Chancellor Richard Rich, Sir Anthony Wingfield and Sir William Peter went to Copt Hall in Essex to see the 35-year-old Lady Mary, who was, of course, the future Mary I and the half-sister of their king and master, the 13-year-old King Edward VI. Now, they'd been sent to Mary's home on a mission to deliver a message from the king. Edward was very unhappy with Mary. He was unhappy with her defiance of his religious legislation. Of course, Edward was Protestant and Mary was a staunch Catholic. I mean, back in March 1551, Mary had ridden through the city of London in a huge procession, all of the lords and ladies in her procession wearing a rosary, which of course was a symbol of Catholicism. And this display had been her protest against her half-brother's outlawing of the Catholic Mass. Mary had, of course, continued celebrating the Mass in her household, even though this obviously was an illegal act. And obviously this was a bit difficult for Edward because his half-sister was breaking the law. So on this day in 1551, Edward sending this message to order Mary and her household to desist. He also sent orders that Sir Anthony Wingfield should replace Robert Rochester as Mary's comptroller, a comptroller of the household being someone that does like the household accounts. Mary was understandably furious with this delegation coming to visit her and with the message that they'd gone with, and refused, obviously, to obey Edward's orders. The men reported back on their visit to the king and his privy council. They explained that Mary had received Edward's letter very humbly. She'd received it on her knees, saying that she would kiss the letter, and not for their matter contained in them. For the matter, said she, I take to proceed not from his majesty, but from you, his counsel. So she was kissing it because it was from her half-brother, but she knew, well, she was suggesting that her half-brother was kind of being controlled by his counsel and that whatever was in it was not her brother at all. It was all to do with the advice he was getting. As she read the letter quietly to herself while reading it in her head, she commented, "Ah, good Mr. Cecil took much pains here." So she was obviously under the impression that the letter and its message had more to do with William Cecil than her brother. The men told her that they had instructions and as Lord Chancellor Rich began to read them, she interrupted him, asking him to be brief, saying, "I am not well at ease, and I will make you a short answer, notwithstanding that I've already declared and written my mind to His Majesty plainly with my own hand." Rich then explained to the King and Council how him and his men had told Mary at good length how the King's Majesty, having used all the gentle means and exhortations that he might to have reduced her to the rites of religion and order of divine service set forth by the laws of the realm, and finding her nothing conformable, but still remaining in her former error, had resolved by the whole estate of His Majesty's Privy Council, and with the consent of divers others than nobility, that she should no longer use the private mass, nor any other divine service than is set forth by the law of the realm. They went on to say that none of her chaplains were to use any form of service apart from what had been set out by the law of the realm. So they were not to do the mass. they were supposed to follow Edward's legislation, and that none of her servants should hear the Mass other or any service other than the lawful one. Rich then reported Mary's reaction to this. First, she protested that to the King's Majesty she was, is, and ever will be His Majesty's most humble and most obedient subject and poor sister, and would most willingly obey all his commandments in anything her conscience saved, yea, and would willingly and gladly suffer death to do His Majesty's good. But rather than she will agree to use any other service than which used at the death of the late king her father, she would lay her head on a block and suffer death. But, said she, I am unworthy to suffer death in so good a quarrel. When the King's Majesty, said she, shall come to such years that he may be able to judge these things himself, His Majesty shall find me ready to obey his orders in religion. But now in these years, although he, good sweet king, have more knowledge than any other of his years, yet is it not possible that he can be a judge in these things. For if ships were to be sent to the seas, or any other thing to be done touching the policy and government of the realm, I am sure you would not think His Highness yet able to consider what were to be done. And much less, said she, can he in these years discern what is fit in manners of divinity. And if my chaplains do say no, no Mass I can hear none, no more can my poor servants. But as for my servants, I know it shall be against their wills, as it shall be against mine. For if they would come where it were, said they would hear it with good will. And as for my priests, they know what they have to do. The pain of your laws is but imprisonment for a short time. And if they will refuse to say Mass for fear of that imprisonment, they may do therein as they will. But none of your new service, said she, shall be used in my house. And if any be said in it, I will not tarry in the house. So Mary was suggesting here that Edward was not quite old enough to make a judgment on this issue. She was explaining that if this concerned war, that, you know, he would be expected to get advice, that he wouldn't be capable of making judgments. So how is he capable on this issue? And she's saying that all she's doing is following the service that was being used at her father's death, and that if her servants listen to hear Mass, then, you know, imprisonment for a short while is the only thing that they're risking, and so she expects them to risk that. The men went on to criticise the men that were in control of Mary's household, men who'd actually been appointed by the King's Council. These men were Sir Robert Rochester, Edward Waldegrave, and Sir Francis Inglefield. And they'd been recently called before the Privy Council and had been ordered to make sure that Mary's household were legal. They'd been ordered to stop Mary and her household celebrating the Mass, but they'd refused to comply, saying that they were willing to risk imprisonment. Rich and his men told Mary that these men had manifestly disobeyed the King's Majesty's counsel, and went on to describe how ill and untruly they had used themselves in the charge committed unto them. To which Mary replied that it was not the wisest counsel to appoint her servants to control her in her own house, and that her servants knew her mind therein well enough. For of all men, she might worst endure any of them to move her in any such matters. And for their punishment, my lords may use them as they think good. And if they refuse to do the message unto her and her chaplains and servants as aforesaid, they be, said she, the honester then, for they should have spoken against their own consciences. When Edward's messengers then explained how they'd been ordered to replace Rochester, Mary told them that she was old enough and capable enough of appointing her own household officers, adding that if they did replace Rochester with another man, then she would go out of her gates, for they too would not dwell in one house. So if they replace Rochester, she's going. She's not staying in the same house as someone that's been appointed by the King's Council in that way. She continued, "I am sickly, and yet I will not die willingly, but will do the best I can to preserve my life. But if I shall chance to die, I will protest openly that you of the council be the causes of my death. You give me fair words, but your deeds be always ill towards me." She then sort of flounced out. I can just imagine her flouncing out. She left them to go to her bedchamber, but came back with a ring, which she delivered to Lord Chancellor Rich on her knees, humbly again, telling him that she would die his true subject and sister and obey his commandments in all things except in these matters of religion, touching the mass and the new service. So this ring was for him to pass on to the king. She then left them again, but the men called Mary's household and her chaplains to them and ordered them, upon pain of their allegiance to the king, that the priest shouldn't celebrate the mass and that the servants should not hear it. The chaplains agreed, and the men also ordered them to report anyone who actually did continue celebrating the mass. They had to report them to the king's council. As the men left, one of Mary's chaplains stopped them, saying that Mary actually wanted to speak to them again out of the window. And this was concerning Robert Rochester, her controller. According to Rich, she prayed us to speak to the Lords of the Council that her controller might shortly return. She explained that since he'd been called to court for interrogation, that she'd been doing the household expenses herself and was weary of the office and so wanted Rochester back. She said, "If my lords will send mine officer home, they shall do the pleasure. Otherwise, if they will send him to prison, I beshrew him if he go not to it merrily and with a good will. And I pray God to send you to do well in your souls and bodies too, for some of you have but weak bodies." So she was saying that Rochester should be willing to go to prison and to go to prison happily for his conscience. She then let the men leave to go back to court and report on everything that had happened to her half-brother and his council. Now, I know that Mary has gone down in history as Bloody Mary for all of the persecutions, the awful, awful burnings of her reign. So I think it's good to sometimes flesh her out a bit more and to look at the Mary that the pre-accession Mary, the Mary before she was queen. Last month in talks I did, I looked at the Mary of summer 1553 when she was rallying men to her cause. People of East Anglia, you know, were willing to give their lives for Mary. And Mary was ready and willing to fight for the throne herself. And here we are 2 years earlier, seeing courage, determination and defiance in this woman. There was no way she was going to compromise her faith. She preferred to obey her God than her king. She had immense courage and faith in spades, don't you think? And she was a woman who inspired loyalty in those around her. She obviously was a very kind woman to her household. Her household were willing to go to prison for their support of their mistress and their God. Now, I'm not condoning any of what happened during her reign. I just think it's good to get a rounded view of her, a much fuller view of who Mary was. And I just find this episode interesting, with Edward sending these men to her and Mary not being willing to play ball at all. She was acting humbly, she was doing things on her knees, she was kissing letters, she was sending rings. But at the end of the day, the message was, no, I'm not willing to compromise. So there you go, a defiant Mary on this day in history. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I do hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget to subscribe so that you can enjoy podcasts on a daily basis. Thank you.